He sneered. 80 generations of your genetic structure were perfect, identical. But you were an anomaly. You were an outcast, a flaw. But the olive-skinned alien would not back down. Our differences make us strong, he said. I've learned that. And you, Exar Kun, world to Tion. You have no Jedi powers. You are laughable. You can only sing songs about great deeds while others go out and actually do them. Tion smiled at him. Her mother-of-pearl eyes glittered in the dim light. Someday, the songs will tell of our great victory over Exar Kun, and I will sing them. The glow continued to brighten as the synergy between the trainees grew more powerful, weaving threads to reinforce their weak spots, to emphasize their strengths. Streen wasn't sure exactly when another image joined the Jedi candidates. He saw a new form without a physical body, short and hunched, with withered hands held in front of it. A misshapen funnel face, whiskered with tentacles, stared with small eyes hooded by a shelf of brow. Streen recognized the ancient Jedi master, Vodo Siask Bas, who had spoken to them from the holocron. Kun's image also saw the ancient Jedi master, and his expression froze in a sculpted grimace of astonishment. Together, Jedi can overcome their weaknesses, Master Vodo said in a bubbly, congested voice. Exar Kun, my student, you are defeated at last. No, the shadow screamed in a night-rending voice as the silhouette fought to discover a part of the circle he could breach. Yes, came another voice, a strong voice. Opposite Master Vodo glimmered the faint, washed-out form of a young man in Jedi robes, Master Skywalker. The way to extinguish a shadow, Kilgall said in her calm and confident voice, is to increase the light. Tyranitai stepped forward with a lightsaber that had been built by Gantaris. Streen met her with Luke Skywalker's lightsaber. The two stared into each other's eyes, nodded, then struck with the brilliant, luminous blades. Their beams crossed in the middle of Exar Kun's shadowy body, pure light intersecting pure light with an explosion of lightning. The flash of dazzling white seemed as bright as an exploding sun. Darkness flooded out of the shade of Exar Kun. The blackness shattered, and fragments flew around the circle, seeking a weak heart in which to hide. Streen and Karana Tai kept their lightsabers crossed, the energy sizzling and searing. With the force, Streen touched the winds again. The air inside the Grand Audience Chamber swirled with increasing Coriolis force to form a whirlwind. The cyclone grew tighter in an invisible knot around the shredded shadow, trapping it and carrying it up toward the rooftop and out, flinging it into the vast emptiness. Exar Kun vanished with only a brief, curtailed scream. The Jedi Knights stood joined together for a final moment, relishing the shared force. Then, in exhaustion and relief and triumph, they separated from each other. The unearthly glow dissipated around them. The image of the alien master, Vodo Siask Bas, stared toward the ceiling as if to catch a last glimpse of his conquered student. And then he too disappeared. With a wheezing cough as he expelled long-trapped air from his lungs and drew in a fresh breath, Master Skywalker groaned and sat up on the stone platform. You've done it, Luke said, gaining strength with each lungful of cool, clean air. The new Jedi Knight surged toward him. You have broken the bonds. With squeals of delight, Jason and Jaina ran to their Uncle Luke. He pulled them into his arms. They giggled and hugged him back. Luke Skywalker smiled out at his students, his face glowing with pride for the group of Jedi Knights he had trained. Together, he said, you make a formidable team indeed. Perhaps we need no longer fear the darkness. 16. In the Sun Crusher's pilot seat, Kip Duron crouched over the controls. He stared at the Millennium Falcon as if it were a demon ready to spring at him. His fingernails scratched down the metallic surface of the navigation panels like claws trying to dig into flesh. His mind had been swimming with the bittersweet memories of happy times with Han, how the two of them had careened over the ice fields in a frantic turbo ski run, how they had made friends in the blackness of the spice mines, how Han had pretended not to be all choked up when Kip left for the Jedi Academy. Part of him was appalled at the idea of threatening Han Solo's life, that he would want to destroy the Millennium Falcon. It had seemed an easy threat, the obvious thing to do. But it came from a dark shadow in the back of his mind, The whispering voice chewed at his thoughts, haunted him constantly. It was the voice he had heard during his training on Yavin 4 in the deepest night and in the echoing obsidian pyramid far out in the jungles, and on top of the great ziggurat from which Kip had summoned the Sun Crusher out of the core of Yavin. Troubled by that voice, Kip had stolen a ship and fled to the forest moon of Endor to meditate beside the ashes of Darth Vader's funeral pyre. He had thought to go far enough away to escape Kun's influence, but he no longer thought that was possible. Kip had traveled to the core systems, but still he felt the chains binding him to the Dark Lord, the malevolent obligations required by the Sith teachings. If he tried to resist and think for himself, the angry tauntings returned with full force, the snapped words, the coercions, the veiled threats. But Han Solo's words tugged at him too, weapons of a different sort that made his heart grow warm, melting the ice of anger. Right now, Exar Kun's voice seemed distracted and distant, as if preoccupied with another challenge. As Kip listened to Han's words, he realized that his friend, knowing little about Jedi teachings, had put his finger on the truth. He was following the dark side. Kip's weak justifications crumbled around him in a storm of excuses built on a fragile foundation of revenge. Han, I... But just as he had been about to speak warmly to Han, to open up and ask his friend to come talk with him, suddenly his controls went dead. An override signal from the Falcon's computer had shut down the Sun Crusher's weapon systems, its navigation controls, its life support. The black net of anger fell over him, smothering his kind intentions. In outrage, Kip found the power to send a burst of controlling thought through the integrated circuits in the Sun Crusher's computer. He flushed the alien programming, wiping pathways clean and rebuilding them in an instant. He remapped the functions with a sudden mental pinpoint that made the Sun Crusher whole again. The systems hummed as they returned to life, charging up. Exar Kun had also been betrayed by his supposed partner, the warlord Ulic Keldroma. Now Han had betrayed Kip. Master Skywalker had also betrayed him by failing to teach the appropriate lessons, appropriate defenses against Exar Kun. In his head, the voice of the Sith Lord shouted for him to kill Han Solo, to destroy the enemy, to let his anger flow through and be strong. It overwhelmed Kip. He squeezed his dark eyes shut, unable to watch as his hands gripped the control levers for launching the torpedo. He primed the system. The screens blinked with warning signals, which he disregarded. He needed to destroy something. He needed to kill those who had betrayed him. His fists gripped the firing handles. His thumbs rested on the launch buttons, squeezing, ready. Squeezing. And then the haunting voice of Exar Kun rose to a wail in his mind, an utterly forlorn scream, as if he were being torn out of this universe and exiled to another place entirely, where he could torment Kip Duan no more. Kip snapped backward in his control seat as if an invisible tow cable had been severed. His arms and head dangled like a puppet with subtly snipped strings. The cool wind of freedom whistled through his mind and body. He blinked his eyes and shuddered with revulsion at what he had been about to do. The Millennium Falcon still gripped the Sun Crusher in its tractor beam. As Kip saw the battered old ship, Han Solo's prized possession, he felt a tidal wave of despair. Kip reached out to the energy torpedo controls and vehemently canceled the firing sequence. The plasma generator flickered and faded as the energy died away. Without the presence of Exar Kun inside him, Kip felt isolated, suddenly in free fall, but independent. He opened the communication channel but couldn't form words for a few moments. His throat was dry. It felt as if he hadn't had anything to eat or drink in 4,000 years. Han, he croaked, and said louder, Han, this is Kip. He paused, not knowing what next to say, what else he could say. He hung his head and finally finished, I surrender. 17. The Twi'lek Tau Sivron still felt jangled from his horrendous passage through the maw, escaping from the rebel invasion force and riding the gravity between black holes. His long head tails tingled with a rush of impressions, delighted to see that the information he had long ago stolen from Dala's secret files, the list of torturous safe routes through the black hole cluster, had been accurate. If the course map had been the least bit imprecise, he and his retreating crew would not be alive now. The Death Star prototype lurched under full power as it emerged safely from the cluster, But just as it sped away from the sinuous, brilliant gases, the propulsion systems fizzled and went offline. Sparks showered from panels as the stormtrooper captain shut down the engine power and rerouted systems. Yem attempted to use a manual fire-extinguishing apparatus to squelch flames licking out of a nearby console, but he succeeded only in short-circuiting the intercom systems. Galanta and Dotson flipped furiously through repair manuals and design specifications. "Director," the stormtrooper captain said, "we have successfully broken free from the maw, though the strain has caused a good deal of damage." Dotson looked up, scowling. "I remind you that this was a non-hardened prototype, never meant to be actually deployed." "Yes, sir," the stormtrooper said in an inflectionless voice. "As I was about to say, I believe the damage can be repaired in only a few days. It is a simple matter of bypassing circuits and reinitializing computer systems. I believe after this shakedown, the prototype will be in much better shape for combat." Tal Sivran rubbed his hands together and smiled.
"Good, good."
He leaned back in the pilot's chair. "That will give us time to select a suitable target for our first attack." Galanta called up a navigational chart displayed across the view screen.
"Director, the Kessel system is very close, as you know. Perhaps we should..."
"Let's get the propulsion units up and running again before we plan too far ahead," Dotson interrupted. "Our ultimate strategy may depend on our capabilities." Yem tore the cover off the communications panel and squinted down into the morass of blackened wires, sniffing the burned insulation. Galanta kept studying her station, calling up readings from the prototype's exterior sensors.
"Director, I've found something puzzling. Looking at the gas turbulence that surrounds the black hole cluster, it appears that another very large ship has recently entered the maw, only moments ago. It seems to have followed one of the other paths Admiral Dalla designated as a safe route through to the installation."
She looked at him, and Tal Sivran flinched away from her unpleasant face.
"We just missed them."
Sivran didn't know what she was talking about, nor why it should concern him. All of these frantic problems were like stinging insects buzzing around his head, and he swatted at them.
"We can't do anything about that now," he said. "It's probably another rebel ship coming to mop up the invasion of our facility." He sighed. "We'll get back at them as soon as we get the Death Star up and running again."
He leaned back in his pilot's chair and closed his beady eyes, longing for just a moment's peace. He wished he had never left his home planet of Ryloth, where the Twi'lek people lived deep within mountain catacombs in the habitable band of twilight that separated the baking heat of day from the frigid cold of endless night. Tal Sivran thought of more peaceful days, breathing the stale air through gaps in his pointed teeth. The heat storms on Ryloth brought sufficient warmth into the twilight zone to make the planet habitable, though desolate. The Twi'leks built their society around the governorship of a 5-member head clan who led the community in all matters until such time as one of them died. At this point, the Twi'leks cast out the remaining members of the head clan to the blasted wasteland and presumably to their deaths while they selected a fresh group of rulers. Tal Sivran had been a member of the head clan, pampered and spoiled by the benefits of power. The entire clan was young and vigorous, and Sivran had expected to reap the benefits of his position for many years. Spacious quarters, Twi'lek dancing women renowned throughout the galaxy, delicacies of raw meat that he could tear with his pointed teeth and savor the spicy liquid flavors. But the good life had lasted barely a standard year. One of his idiot companions had lost his balance on a scaffolding while inspecting a deep grotto construction project and had fallen to impale himself upon a 10,000-year-old stalagmite. According to their custom, the Twi'lek people had exiled Tal Sivran and the other 3 members of the head clan into the blasted deserts of the Dayside to face the heat storms and the scouring wind. They had resigned themselves to death, but Tal Sivran had convinced the other 3 that if they worked together, they could survive, perhaps eke out an existence in an uninhabited cave farther down the spine of mountains. The others had agreed, clinging to any hope. And then, as they slept that night, Tal Sivran had killed them all, taking their meager possessions to increase his own chances of survival. Covering himself with thick layers of garments stripped from the dead bodies of his companions, he had trudged across the fiery landscape, not knowing what he was searching for. Tal Sivran had thought the glittering ships were mere mirages
until he stumbled into the encampment. It was a rugged training base and refueling station for the Imperial Navy, frequented by smugglers but supported by the Empire. Tal Sivran had met a man named Tarkin there, an ambitious young commander who already had several ships and who intended to make the small outpost on Ryloth a strategically important refueling station in the Outer Rim. Over the years, Tal Sivran had worked for Tarkin, proving himself to be an unparalleled manager, a skillful arranger of the complex business that Tarkin, then Moff Tarkin, then Grand Moff Tarkin, had underway. Sivran's career had culminated in his directorship of Maw Installation, which he had now fled in the face of a rebel invasion. If Tarkin was still alive, the embarrassing retreat would no doubt figure negatively in Tal Sivran's next performance appraisal. He had to do something to make up for it, post-haste. "Director," Yem said, interrupting his thoughts, "I think the comm system is functioning again. It will be ready to use as soon as I log the modifications into its maintenance record." Sivran sat up. "At least something works around here." Yem entered numbers into one of the computer stations and nodded his horned head at Tal Sivran. "Ready, Director." "Turn it on," he said. "Let me speak to the crew." His last words echoed through the speakers, startling him. He cleared his throat and leaned closer to the voice pickup on the pilot's chair. "Attention, everyone. Hurry with those repairs," he snapped into the intercom. His voice sounded like the commands of a deity as he spoke through all levels. "I want to destroy something as soon as possible." He switched off. The stormtrooper captain turned to him. "We will do our best, sir. I should have final repair estimates within a few hours."
"Good, good."
He stared across the open emptiness of space, looking at all the possible starpoint targets. Tal Sivran had in his possession one of the most devastating weapons in the galaxy, but it remained untested for now. 18. The second-timed detonation occurred just as Wedge Antilles and his assault squad charged into the Maw installation's power reactor complex. Shaped charges planted by a sabotage crew exploded at the base of the reactor's cooling towers, shutting down the enormous generator that powered the facilities, the laboratories, the mainframe computers, and life support systems. Wearing mottled brown and gray body armor, Wedge had led his assault team across the connector tube catwalks to the power asteroid.